Chapter 9. Culture.
Human culture arose as we conquered the basics of survival. Because once we no longer had to struggle, we almost immediately grew bored. So we spent a huge amount of time creating entertaining distractions to be enjoyed in our newfound downtime. Early culture revolved around storytelling, typically focused on real-life adventures. But we quickly expanded our cultural arsenal. We created music and dance and celebrities and then combined all three into one powerhouse network show. We devised games and ways to lose money on them. We crafted figurines of things we admired, such as mythical animals and untenably large-breasted women. We juggled and joked, performed feats of strength and wrote. We castrated young boy singers and fed Christians to lions. The last two were really just fads. We weren't total psychos. Across time and in every land, our societies drew on and were influenced by their predecessors to create their own distinct styles of art, dress, and intoxicants. In short, their own culture. Fortunately, in modern times, globalization allowed this great cultural variety to be efficiently winnowed down to everyone on the planet watching the same police procedural dramas while eating franchise delivery pizza. Yet ultimately, culture's most personal effect was that it made us actually feel things. Great joy from comedy, deep sadness from drama or reality dating shows, or more complex emotions like when we'd hear that song Summer Breeze, which we hated but through unfortunate happenstance was playing when we lost our virginity. The point is, culture not only helped our days go faster, it tapped into our emotional cores. Yes, the artifacts you find in our civilization's wreckage will show you how we lived. But if you want to know how we felt about how we lived, how we interpreted our existence, you must look to our culture. This was our record of what made us distinctly human. For ours was a complicated existence, filled with great achievements, enormous compassion, inexplicable violence, and myriad contradicting actions. But for all our differences, none of us, white, black, Jew, Muslim, gay, or straight, none of us could get all the way through Brian's song without crying like babies.
Entertainment.
One of the best ways to relax after our daily struggles to obtain food, clothing, shelter, and a mate was to watch simulations of others engaging in those same struggles. Entertainment sometimes drew us together by giving us a pretext to socialize with each other, but in a larger sense, it served to keep us apart by immersing us so thoroughly in fantasy that it seemed more fun to just stay in. Without entertainment, life would have been merely a series of self-generated epiphanies leading to greater personal understanding. No wonder we preferred juggling.
Comedy and tragedy.
The two most basic modes of storytelling were comedy and tragedy. Tragedy allowed an audience to feel a character's pain. Comedy allowed an audience to heartily enjoy a character's pain. Both modes originated in ancient Greece, in plays featuring protagonists and antagonists, along with a large chorus so the less talented kids could participate.
The Tragedy of Romeo and Juliet.
What's in a name? That which we call a rose by any other name would smell as sweet.
What if it were called Assflower?
Yea, though it be called Assflower, yet it would still smell as sweet.
What if it were called Cock of the Dog?
Yea, though it be called Cock of the Dog, it needs not smell like one.
What if it were called the Bishop's Filthy Rectum?
Dost thou have many more of these to go through?
Books.
Books are the permanent repository of all mankind's knowledge and wisdom, a painstakingly detailed record of our entire existence. Please feel free to thumb through them, although chances are you're going to want to wait for the movie.
Music.
If you came across the golden record on your journey here, then you've already discovered music, perhaps our most joyous form of expression. Music blended voices and instruments and glorious melodies, harmonies and rhythms that could evoke any emotion. We played music at funerals, weddings and parties. We had concerts where we all got together just to listen to music. We developed incredibly sophisticated devices so that no matter where we went, we could have music in our cars or at the gym, or if we were somewhere where someone else was listening to music that we didn't really like, we could still listen to our music. Music was really cool. Until it got too popular, and then it was some serious sellout bullshit.
Film.
Moving pictures were an incredibly sophisticated technology that allowed man to recreate and project all the sights and sounds of real life only with better-looking people. Film, or movies to those not attending a Campus Godard retrospective, combined theater's emotional immediacy with photography's spectacular realism and sound's remarkable hearitude in a complete sensory experience. In later years, film added nudity and explosions. You know, for the kids.
Television.
If going to the movies was like worshiping in a cathedral, then watching television was like masturbating in a confessional. No wonder that from the outset, TV, we called it that after it rendered us too lazy to use four-syllable words, felt so sinfully good. A flip of the switch, and we were sucked into a smaller-than-life world controlled by unseen forces. The existential crises filling our brains were instantly soothed, and the burden of free will lightened and crystallized into the simple dilemma of whether or not to change channels. As for the programming, there was a hard and fast rule. The total amount of quality television at any one time was a constant. Thus, as what were once a mere 3 channels evolved into 400. Well, you do the math. What did we like to watch on television? Well, the short answer, anything. But there were certain kinds of shows we were particularly drawn to.
Sitcom.
Allowed us to spend half an hour in the company of 4 stock characters. Smarty, Dummy, Crazy, and Grouchy.
Western.
Fulfilled our lust for casual murder without offending our puritanical moral sensibilities.
Late night talk show.
Because there was no more relaxing way to drift off to sleep than hearing Kate Hudson relate an anecdote about Matthew McConaughey's mischievous on-set antics.
Medical drama.
TV doctors focused entirely on the life and death and yelling aspects of their work, and rarely on the cleaning bedpans and analyzing urine part.
Legal drama.
Immersed viewers in a world where good usually triumphed over evil. Frequently aired in marathons, which were in every way the opposite of real marathons.
Cable news.
Thanks to technology, it was possible to keep people well informed about important world events 24 hours a day with accurate, impartial, in-depth journalism. We didn't do it, but it was possible.
Artists.
At the center of our cultural endeavors was a small subset of people called artists. Seemingly endowed with heightened sensitivity to the world around them, artists felt and expressed the terrible beauty of our fleeting existence. The rest of us had jobs.
Culture, high and low.
With so much culture, we needed a way to sort it all out. One way was placing each bit of cultural output on a spectrum of social status to ascertain its significance. High culture aspired to fulfill humanity's greatest intellectual, aesthetic, or spiritual potential. Middle culture had less lofty aspirations, but was more accessible to those with less education. Low culture focused on sex, excrement, and instant gratification, and was what we mostly spent our time on.
Sports.
Exerting oneself for no apparent reason was called exercise. Exerting oneself with the goal of victory was called sports. Sports were an exciting and intense way for members of a society to put on uniforms and go at each other in a nearly deathless way. It is not possible to overestimate the importance that this war substitute had in our society. While few of us ever got to play them professionally, tens of thousands of us would gather in cavernous stadia to witness our favorite teams score, or in the case of soccer, not score. Millions more would watch on television, confident in the one simple truth of sport. Those players and spectators who did not share the enthusiasm you had for your team sucked. A handful of us, through hard work and God-given height, were good enough at these war games to do them professionally. We called these giants among men athletes. They were better than us at all things, until they too got old, bald, and fat.
In the ruins. Gyms.
Throughout the remains of the developed world, you will find facilities filled with what appear to be torture devices. These were gyms, places where we went to engage in the kind of grueling and tedious physical exertion our ancestors would have killed their eldest children to be free of. If you want to use the equipment, feel free to do so, but make sure another alien is there to spot you. And wipe the bench.
Leisure.
We're not sitting back being passively entertained. We often engaged in more active, equally useless pursuits known as leisure activities. Once, leisure was a luxury enjoyed only by infants and aristocrats who used it to fulfill their very busy napping and vomiting schedules, respectively. But social progress eventually brought periods of leisure to nearly everyone. The activities that filled this time generally took one of three forms: those serving zero practical purposes, games, sports; those mimicking useful pursuits at which previous generations had toiled for their livelihoods but which we connived to find relaxing, carpentry, fishing; and those that were out-and-out self-destructive, gambling, recreational drugs, but all succeeded in filling the yawning gap between the previous thing we had to do and the next thing.
In the ruins, video games.
The boxy machines attached to many of our televisions were used to play video games. Interactive, graphically rich worlds where we could act out our dreams of being professional athletes, Italian plumbers, mutant hedgehogs, and psychopaths who beat hookers to death. By 2010, video games were the most profitable form of entertainment in the world. But, and this is where it may get a little awkward, many of the most popular games had a recurring theme: locating, defending ourselves from, and destroying you.
Gambling.
Gambling was the attempt to win money by achieving success in a game whose probability-based rules were explicitly designed to thwart that very outcome. Now, to the uninitiated, this sounds like the stupidest thing any rational creature could possibly do. But the goal was not merely financial gain. There was a thrill involved in risking one's wages, house, and wife on the turn of a card, the roll of a die, or the speed of a hungry greyhound. Yes, gamblers generally lost their money, but they deemed it a small price to pay for the thrill of almost not losing their money.
In the ruins, Las Vegas.
Place your bets, ladies and gentlemen. Place your bets.
Right in the middle of a vast desert wasteland, you will find a concentrated man-made wasteland. This is Las Vegas. Also known as Sin City, it was a place built by gangsters where at 4 in the morning, you could sit on furniture made of live naked ladies while eating a $1.99 prime rib dinner and watching a tiger fuck a penguin. It was also a very popular place to get married.
Pornography.
So, you have probably found some items of entertainment that seem to feature mainly naked people in the act of copulation. If you haven't found these items yet, we suggest looking beneath our mattresses, in the backs of our locked drawers, and in our bedroom closets behind the sweaters. These were a special kind of entertainment known as pornography, which was designed to provide its viewers with a vicarious sense of what it might be like to have vigorously mechanical sexual intercourse with a grim, sad-eyed partner. But it wasn't very popular. Not at all.
Dear Penthouse Forum, I never thought this would happen to me. The other day I was home, alone, reading Penthouse Forum, when I found myself rather aroused. Imagine my surprise when I felt something grip my slightly below average size erect penis. It was my hand, covered in a lubricant I kept next to my bed. "You again," I said.
Escape. Alcohol and drugs.
Because we like being happy, we often ingested substances that altered our biochemistry to pleasurable effect. The only problem was that when these drugs wore off, we were even sadder than before. Luckily, there was a cure. More drugs. Every culture had acceptable drugs and unacceptable drugs. This had nothing to do with their danger or potency. A bottle of vodka, widely accepted, was arguably more lethal than a hit of ecstasy, widely deplored. We didn't do certain drugs simply because we didn't do them. And if you needed more explanation than that, everyone from the president to the local PTA was happy to see you die in jail.
Alcohol.
Alcohol was the undisputed king of intoxicants, more popular than all other drugs combined, expressly permitted by every major culture except one, and that one really could have used a few drinks to take the edge off. Alcohol lowered our social inhibitions, came in a variety of flavors from well-rounded to painful burning, and greatly reduced the memory of the hurt and damage caused by excessive drinking. In fact, it was so popular, the few people who didn't want to do it anymore remained anonymous, so as not to embarrass themselves.
Drugs.
The use of recreational drugs could be very pleasurable, but all too often it could evolve into a crippling addiction. Luckily, we as a species were strong-willed enough to be able to do drugs as often as we liked without having a problem because we could stop whenever we wanted, and it wasn't controlling us, having said that. Could we borrow $20? Come on, man, don't be a dick.
Fashion.
Humans were constantly transforming the basic necessities of life into forms of artistic and cultural expression. Food became cuisine, shelter became architecture, and water became the enchanted forest water safari featuring the world's wildest lazy river. The epitome of this phenomenon was fashion, which transformed clothing into a way of expressing our authentic inner selves, at least for a couple of months until our authentic inner selves were out. Some argued this was a superficial endeavor reflecting nothing more than our endless capacity for vanity. We refer to those people as frumpy.
FAQs. Future alien questions.
First of all, humanity, we are big fans of your work.
Well, thank you, future aliens. It's very kind of you to say.
Especially some of your earlier stuff.
No, all right.
Let's start at the beginning. How did cave paintings come about?
Hey, you're making us feel old. Well, one day, we returned from a great day of hunting, and Og told a joke about it, and Grok didn't laugh, and Og said, you kind of had to be there, and Ook had some leftover berries, I think, from Cave Cobbler, and he said, you know what? We could show what happened by means of an abstract representation of the event that we, for lack of a better word, paint right here in our cave walls, which, if you knew him, was so Ook.
That leads us to process. Where did you get your ideas?
Well, sometimes from something we observed in our lives. But more often, we were inspired by seeing someone else's idea that worked, and then tweaking it just enough so that we couldn't get sued. And then if we did get sued, we'd just say, like, oh, that was an homage.
You worked in so many different styles. You were constantly evolving.
Well, thank you. The way that usually worked was one of us would see the world in a new way, and then the rest of us would laugh at that one person, and then he would die unappreciated. And everyone else would imitate him and pretend they were fans of his the whole time.
You also tackled so many different media. Visual arts, literature, music, the dance. Is there one you enjoyed working in the most?
Yeah, at the end, ringtones. There's something about the inherent parameters of the form that's oddly freeing. Crazy Frog would never have worked as, say, an opera or a novel, but as a ringtone, it was sublime.
I'm sorry to bring this up, but I'm duty-bound to ask. The Middle Ages. What happened to your work? You seemed to forget everything you knew.
Yeah, that was kind of an intense millennium for us. We took the fall of Rome pretty hard, and we weren't taking very good care of ourselves at that time. That wasn't our best work.
You're talking about the plague.
We don't want to get into it, is it?
Last question. As you look back on 50,000 years of artistic genius, do you have any regrets?
None. Well, maybe triumph of the will. Jeremy Piven.
Thank you, humanity. I'm afraid your time is up.
Oh, we know.